Ato. Therefore. Vajashva. Except. Mam. Me. Vadra. O gentle one. Vajantim. Willing to serve. Me. To me. Goyam. Mercy. Kuru. Do. Etavan. Such a measure. Purushaha. For any gentleman. Dharmaha. Religious principle. Yat. That. Artan. To the distressed. Anukampate. Is compassionate. Translation. Kalakanya continued, O gentle one, I am now present before you to serve you. Please accept me and thus show me mercy. It is a gentleman's greatest duty to be compassionate upon a person who is distressed. So you can repeat. Kalakanya continued. O gentle one, I am now present before you to serve you.
Please accept me.
And thus show me mercy.
It is a gentleman's greatest duty
to be compassionate upon a person
who is distressed.
So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Yavana Raj, the king of the Yavanas, could also refuse to accept Kalakanya, daughter of time, but he considered the request due to the order of Narada Muni. Thus, he accepted Kalakanya in a different way. In other words, the injunctions of Narada Muni, or the path of devotional service, can be accepted by anyone within the three worlds, and certainly by the king of the Yavanas. Lord Chaitanya himself requested everyone to preach the bhakti cult, bhakti yoga, the cult of bhakti yoga, all over the world, in every village and town. Preachers in the Krishna consciousness movement have actually experienced that even the Yavanas and Malechas have taken to spiritual life on the strength of Narada Muni's Pancharatrika Vidhi. When mankind follows the disciplic succession as recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone throughout the world will benefit. So, Ato bhajasva mam vadra bhajanti me dayam kuru etavan purusho dharmo yadartan anu kampate. So, Om Ganat Madandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tuzmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the topic being dealt with here in this particular verse and purport is one of compassion. And Kalakanya is making an argument here to Yavanaraj that you should be compassionate upon me and accept me. Whereas Yavanaraj, he is accepting her in a different way, as Prabhupada explains. We'll read about that later on in this chapter. But that's due to Narada Muni's instruction. So, in other words, Yavanaraj is not accepting her just because of this principle of being sentimental or compassion, because she's using this word compassion in a very interesting way. And it's often misused, the word compassion or sympathy or empathy or whatever. Misused in the sense that it's materialistically applied. And of course, this is one of the basic principles of the Krishna conscious movement, basic teachings of the Krishna conscious movement. That is, what is compassion? I remember many years ago we used to do plays during the Sunday feast. And there was a play that illustrated misplaced compassion. And that play was the play of a man. There was a man in the play. And he was drowning. And the man was drowning. The older devotees remember this play. The man was drowning, and he was crying out, help, 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 help. Okay. Man does not live like bread alone. Anyway, so he was crying, help, 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 help. And then another buddy rushed out to help the man who was drowning, playing, making believe he was drowning. And what did he do? He grabbed the man's coat. I think some of you remember this. Anyone seen that? Purvis seen that, I'm sure. He grabbed the guy's coat and said, I save you, Jai. And the person drowned. So that's called misplaced compassion. Of course, we should feel compassion for someone who's suffering externally, too. I mean, that's not the point. It's not that we're going to just say, you know, that's your karma. Like there was a... One time there was a devotee who put on a play for a Sunday feast, and it was called That's Your Karma. And it was hosted, the name of the host was Don Yamaraj. You know, Don Yamaraj. Anyway, so, and so what he basically did was that he went over someone's life, and he, it was an interesting play. We used to do so many plays in ISKCON in the beginning days. He went over someone's life, and now he's going to adjust it so it doesn't work anymore. So this is like a typical scenario. So he... okay. Okay. So he went... He went... Deja vu. So he went over someone's life. You know, that, for example, there was an abortionist. I mean, someone who... performs abortion, and then he said, you were a doctor, you did this, and you, therefore, this is your karma, and then you saw a display of his karma. He actually had to go into a womb of a lady and be aborted for as many abortions as he performed. So, that's true. I mean, there is karma. For every action, there is an opposite, equal and opposite reaction. That's obvious. And that's one of the basic tenets of our teachings. However, it's not that we look at people who are suffering and say that to them, like that guy in the play, that's your karma. Ha. Like that. Or, you know, in a derogatory way, we talk about karmis or vikarmis. They're suffering. Aww. And then it's sort of like a sense of superiority we get, or a sense of enjoyment, or you know, it helps our false prestige. You know, increases our false prestige. We look down. No, we should feel compassion for someone who is suffering materially, and suffering spiritually, or suffering mentally, or psychologically, or whatever. I mean, and then we should endeavor to help them. We should endeavor to help them in the right way. The right way is, you know, you can give someone food, you can give someone help, but you should also give them Krishna consciousness at the same time. Because if you don't give them Krishna consciousness at the same time, it's not solving the problem because they have certain reactions to suffer or enjoy. There's an action and reaction. So somehow or other we have to give people Krishna consciousness. And if we don't, if we just look sentimentally, then we're not really... what's called Aryans. I mean, people know a higher purpose of life. That word Aryan was misused by Hitler in World War II and by the Germans. You know, Aryan, they got the Aryan nation. And that's I'm not going to go over the derivation of that word. But one who knows the higher purpose of life. Like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he was not acting or thinking like an Aryan. He was being compassionate or sentimental in regard to his family members and not in regard to everybody in general. He was thinking, and it was actually not even the best thing for his family members, like his cousin brothers, the Kurus. He was thinking, you know, how can I, not only the Kurus, but Grandfather Bhishma and others, he said, how can I go on? How can I attack these people? You know, and he was feeling compassion based upon the body rather than based upon some spiritual perspective. And so therefore he even dropped his bow Gandiva, feeling that. And Krishna, of course, chastised him. That is sort of like Kripana. He called him a Kripana, a miserly person, for thinking like that. So the compassion, it's interesting, compassion when it's based on the body, or not just thinking, you know, the body's suffering, but based upon those who are connected to me, thinking those who are connected to be more worthy of my help or of my compassion, that is actually passion rather than compassion. So a devotee, actually one who is Krishna conscious, sees everyone, yastu sarvani bhutane atmane bhanu pashati, with equal vision, whether they are connected with one physically or not connected with one physically. And I'll give you the example. Like the example is of two examples I'm going to give to illustrate that. One is Lord Ramchandra. Lord Ramchandra, he saw, of course, he was very loving towards Sita Devi, but he actually saw his citizens of equal importance with his wife, which is really interesting. He saw his duty. It's actually quite hot in here. He saw his duty towards his citizens as just as important as his duty toward his wife, and he was considered in that way. So it appears like he was very cruel to his wife, but he took the duty of the citizens as the overriding principle, and therefore he had to ask Sita Devi to leave the kingdom. So that's one instance. Another instance in the Lord's pastimes, I mean, this is, of course, there's esoteric reasons for that too. When the Lord sent Sita Devi away, it was so that they could experience the mood of Vipralamba Seva. So there's an esoteric thing behind that too. But let's even the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the most munificent personality of Godhead, and this appears very cruel. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left his wife and family in the middle of the night to take sannyas. And why did he take sannyas? Of course, there's an esoteric reason behind that too. But the exoteric or the apparent reason is to save the living entities, because people weren't taking his teachings that seriously. In fact, his own students, they would chastise him because he was chanting the names of the gopis, feeling great separation from the gopis and from the Vrindavan pastimes. And his own students started to chastise him, and he ran after the students. The students said, just chant Hare Krishna, basically. And so he ran after the students with a stick, that student with a stick. And so everybody was really upset with Lord Chaitanya's or Nimai Pandit's activities. And so in order to get the respect so that people would take him seriously, that was one of the main reasons he took sannyas. And he left his young wife, you know, in the middle of the night. And that's, you know, if you tell that to someone who's not, you know, aware of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then they'll think, whoa, what's going on here? But for the sake of everyone, you know, in other words, he was showing that one should consider everyone equally. So it's interesting that we don't consider everyone equally. I'm not talking about people leaving their wives. That's not really the purpose of this class, is to tell you to leave your wives or your husbands and just like head to the hills. But we tend to give compassion. I mean, we in general, I'm not saying this about any specific person, but we tend to give compassion to people, let's say, who are of the same race or the same nationality. And we look differently upon different, even human beings, what to speak of other living entities. I mean, let's say we're talking about the Aborigines in, you know, wherever, Brazil, or the Aborigines in some other country, or in Australia. Then we have this differential outlook. We look at them, you know, just like, you know, they're not worthy of compassion. Or even, let's say Fiji. Okay, let me take Fiji, where I do a lot of my preaching. That our movement is like 99.99% Indians. And we don't really approach the native Fijians. And it's interesting. And even in Africa, when Brahmananda, he was a sannyasi then, Brahmananda Prabhu was preaching, he would preach to the Indians. And when Prabhupada came and said, what about the natives? You know, that's what we're here to preach to. So, I mean, of course, preaching to people from India is quite much easier because they're already, let's say, accustomed to the Vedic understanding. And they may, of course, they may have some misunderstanding, too, that in that case it's actually more difficult. But in any case, it's easier for them to give donations, to get donations from them. So Prabhupada chastised me. He said, you know, preach to the natives. And so Prabhupada had him rent a hall in the middle of the ghetto, whatever you may call that in Africa. And then people were coming and chanting Hare Krishna there. And Prabhupada was very, very happy about that. So Prabhupada had this vision of all living entities being equal. So whereas we make this discrimination, I mean, even in the newspaper, I was reading one thing that people respond differently with different compassionate outlooks depending on whether a natural disaster or war is happening in Europe or happening in Africa, right? You know, because they look at the Europeans and they say, oh, they're like us. I mean, there's that natural inclination. Like when the war was happening in the Balkan area, you know, had the Serbians, the nice Serbians, attacking everybody else. Anyway, that's part of my zone. So they were attacking everybody else. So you know, on the news, I remember everyone was looking at it, and I said, "Oh, they look just like us Americans." So we got to do something to help, right? So if something happens in Africa, you know, people look differently. You know, externally they look different, and it doesn't strike people as much. Do you understand what I'm talking about? It doesn't strike people as much. Like if someone looks very similar to you or the same racial characteristics, then you feel more connection with them. And that's the bodily consciousness. And then, so there's this racism and nationalism. I mean, in America, you know, we just want to shut all the doors. You know, the immigration thing. You know, they have these even citizen groups that patrol the borders with Mexico. You know, it's not, and then they want to put, they have put like cameras every like 1 mile along the border. You know, just like patrol, like to keep people from coming in. I mean, come on. It'd be like we patrol the door of the temple to keep people from coming in and eating prasadam. Because we want to have all the prasadam for ourselves. So Prabhupada called the border guards like barking dogs. In fact, because Prabhupada had some experiences with the border guards, they would, you know, ask so many questions, they would bark, as Prabhupada said. But basically, the whole world belongs to Krishna. So all this nationalism stuff, you know, where you restrict people from going from one country to another, or you look down upon certain people because they happen to be a different race, a different nationality, a different religion, or whatever. And that's bodily consciousness. Or you even look at different species and see them to be less and more worthy of compassion. For example, we'll consider in America a cat and a dog worthy of love and compassion, right? And if you consider a cow worthy of compassion, I mean, or you try to apply the same laws against animal cruelty to the interaction that people have with cows, and it's just not going to work. I remember one of my godbrothers, Almar Indra Prabhu, he's a lawyer. He wanted to take those laws and, you know, sue different people or arrange for the prosecution of certain people based upon the laws against animal cruelty. He's wanted to do that for many, many years to, you know, preach Krishna consciousness using the legal system. So A devotee, so that's the first point about compassion. A devotee has to consider, I mean, that all living entities, whether they're human beings, whether they're the same race as me, whether they're the same nationality as me, equally worthy of help or love or consideration, whatever you may say. So that's the first point about compassion. And then one has to understand how to bring that person to Krishna consciousness, whether it's a slow process, a long or a quick process, depending upon the person's situation. It's not that you preach heavy to everyone, because that may drive someone away from Krishna consciousness. So you have to see every living entity as a potential servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's one thing about compassion. And let's see, what are the, some of the other things I wanted to say? So there's some interesting stories that illustrate, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that illustrate Lord Chaitanya's compassion towards other living entities and his love for other living entities. There was the story in South India of Lord Chaitanya. He was staying at, where was he staying? At the Kurma Brahmana's house. There was a Brahmana, Kurma Brahmana. And he was staying at his house, and Lord Chaitanya left to go somewhere else. And there was a leper, his name was Vasudev, came to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he came too late because Lord Chaitanya had already left. But when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that, he returned to this Brahmana's house and saw the leper. And instead of being disgusted with the leprosy, I mean, generally when we see someone with leprosy or some bodily deformity, we become disgusted, isn't it? We go, ooh, you know, who's going to touch someone like that? So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came up to that leper and he embraced the leper. And then immediately, of course, the leper, Vasudeva, the leper's leprosy went away and he became extremely beautiful like a Gandharva. So we see Lord Chaitanya's compassion, of course, even relieving the material distress there. So as I mentioned before, compassion is not just limited to spiritual help, but also material help at the same time. And of course, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's touch, the leper Vasudeva became, he wasn't a leper anymore, he became imbued with pure love of God, and he started dancing in ecstasy. So he had both benedictions by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So other stories about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's compassion and preaching, not that he, I'm trying to illustrate the point that his preaching was not only that he just, you know, used philosophy to convince people, but sometimes he tolerated things for a long period of time. With Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he tolerated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's impersonal or Mayavadi presentation of the Vedanta Sutra for a whole week before he actually spoke. So, you know, compassion also means tolerance. Like Lord Kapiladev states, Tatikshiva Kurunika, before you can be compassionate, you have to be tolerant. And because tolerance means you have to be able to deal with people's inebrieties and not condemn them because of those inebrieties, whether it happens to be, you know, the leprosy we mentioned before or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's impersonal conceptions or whether in whatever inebrieties someone has, one has to be able to tolerate them to try to bring them to a higher platform of devotional service. So this is very important. So then the question is, you know, how do we develop compassion like we're talking about for all other living entities? I mean, this is a real big question, because right now we have passion. Passion means we try to enjoy, and even giving help to certain living entities because they happen to be connected to our body or connected to our race or connected to our nationality, that's also passion, because it's part of that same skin disease thing, that we're concerned only with certain living entities. So that's also passion. You know, passion means to make that discrimination, to try to enjoy something. Because why is it trying to enjoy? Because we're enjoying because they're connected to us. It's not Krishna-centered anymore. It's connected to us. Like if I'm compassionate to Americans or white people, I do that because it's connected with me. You know, there's a self-centeredness there. Try to understand that. Or if I'm only compassionate to my disciples, that's another thing we find in ISKCON sometimes, not all the time, that someone is, you know, dealing very nicely with his disciples, and other people, you know, you're an outsider, you know, like that. And I've tried to get away from that. I mean, I've told the devotees I don't want any, like, disciple meetings or stuff like that, because we basically have to help everybody. It's not that if we see my disciples and others, that's also part of self-centeredness, because it's still me again. So we have to change that consciousness from me to Krishna, that people connected to Krishna, not people connected to me, are the only ones worthy of compassion. I mean, people connected to me are also worthy of compassion. But basically, not special compassion. Special compassion is given to everybody because they're connected with Krishna. So it has to be Krishna-centered instead of me-centered. So that's really the point about compassion. The question is, how do you become Krishna-centered? Well, you have to love Krishna, because real compassion, in other words, real compassion versus passion only comes when you love Krishna. And how do you love Krishna? You hear about Krishna. And it's really interesting how the hearing affects the heart and the consciousness. I was thinking about that yesterday when I was riding my bike. Nowadays, when I ride my bike, I listen to Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's why I've been telling so many Chaitanya Charitamrita stories. And so I was hearing about how Lord Chaitanya's associates arrived in Jagannath Puri. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was explaining to King Prataparudra. They were standing on top of the palace or something like that. And King Prataparudra was asking, who is this, who is this, who is this, who is that? And he was explaining to him who each personality was and glorifying each personality. And it was so enlivening to hear that. And, you know, somehow or other the heart became softened just by that hearing process, even though I was riding by. It became softened. And then, so I was contrasting that with hearing something mundane. So then this morning I was getting ready for Mangalarti, and you know, somehow or there was a Time magazine there. You know, Time magazine? Time magazine on the table. And I just, you know, as I was getting ready, I just looked at the Time magazine, you know, the attractive features of Time magazine. Somehow or other, you know, I looked at it. And there was an article about, you see how the mind gets disturbed by these material things. There was an article about how India is not permitting Walmart to enter. And so immediately my mind grasped upon that. My mind was thinking, why not? It would be so nice to have Walmart and Braj. You know, I could go over on you and I could just go on my bike and buy whatever I needed at Walmart. You know, why not? You know, so the mind gets into these. The point I'm making is that when you hear something, not that it's important about Walmart or some stupid thing like that, but when you read something, you hear something, it's just like the mind gets into these different things. And it's no longer Krishna-centered, it's me-centered. That was the point I was making. That is, you know, it would be more convenient for me, it would be better, you know, just a mundane conception there. I mean, it would be better at Walmart, but anyway. So the point is, just by hearing, especially during the Brahma Muhurta time, I got to be careful. You know, then, isn't it, by hearing something mundane, it really agitates the mind. And actually, that's what the Bhagavatam says, you know, hearing all these things agitates the mind and takes the center away from Krishna. Whereas hearing, especially hearing from Srila Prabhupada, that's why I like the Chaitanya Charitamrita readings that I'm listening to, because it's Prabhupada's translation. And Prabhupada's not speaking, but it's Prabhupada's translation, so it has that potency. It's a devotee reading. And so it just really makes the mind Krishna-centered. You're really thinking, you know, Krishna, I want to please Krishna. I want to, you know, when I heard that, I said, I want to be there and see Lord Chaitanya's associates too. You know, and so the connection with Krishna becomes very tight by hearing Shushushro Shradanasya Vasudeva Katavuchi. Shan Mahatsevya Vipra Tirtana Shevanam. So basically when we hear about Krishna, about Lord Chaitanya, then that equal vision arises because we see people as connected with Krishna. Krishna is the center at that point. But we have to hear from Krishna's pure devotees to have that particular experience or understanding. So that was my solution to the whole thing. You hear about Krishna and you become attracted. You take the pleasure of Krishna as the most important, and then you see equally. It can't be artificial. You can't artificially see everyone equally. You know, if I say to someone, even in the temple, you see a cockroach equally with a cat, even the devotees will reject that. So it has to be based upon Krishna, not based upon some artificial imposition or adjustment of the consciousness. Anyway, so that's compassion. So any questions or comments about these things? Yes.
We lose our compassion for them.
Yeah.
I've seen it where, you know, it's like people are willing to encourage someone, a young person that's grew up in a movie because they chant their rounds or they like kirtan. But if they're not in that space, our heart gets hard and we push them away. And that's, you know, it's even if there is a connection, we know these children, we grew up in our community,
right,
and we still lose our compassion for them. And so, How to combat that
occurs? Well, you have to take my course. So, and you have to understand, actually, it's wonderful when the children don't do what we want them to do. It's wonderful because they're expressing their autonomy. I mean, you have to see why they're like that. I mean, if you, what is that? Person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. So, you know, if you try to force someone to be Krishna conscious, you know, a child or whatever, and they do it, they're not really Krishna conscious anyway. And later on, they'll reject that. And that's what I've seen with many young people who supposedly acted nicely when they were young. I mean, they were nice, and that, you know, with quotes rather. Then later on, they were so traumatized that later on, they don't want to do those activities. They can't wake up early and they can't chant. Chanting becomes like traumatic for them, or going to RT becomes traumatic, or because it's their need for autonomy. It's a definite need. So if you understand that everybody is acting to fulfill their particular needs, and children too, and you appreciate that, that they're not acting like rascals. You know, it's easy to call them rascals or demons or whatever, you know, like that, then you'll have empathy and compassion. What does compassion mean? To actually feel what others are feeling, and our empathy, feel what others are feeling, at least to understand. Sympathy is something different. Sympathy is about me, that I feel bad for you. I feel bad because you're suffering. You understand? Like if you see someone in the hospital and they're sick and you just feel, oh, I feel so bad for you. That doesn't really do it for anybody or the person who's suffering. So as far as the children, we should be very happy when they don't do what we want. I mean, at least I would be. And just say, just leave it up to them. I mean, Krishna consciousness is based on free will. You know, someone has to decide whether or not to be Krishna conscious on their own free will. And if we leave it up to them, they will naturally become Krishna conscious because Krishna consciousness is attractive. We have to let Krishna consciousness itself bring one to Krishna consciousness. I mean, it sounds like it. tautology. But we definitely, because, so anyway, one of the ways I preach to people is I don't force them to take up Krishna consciousness. I say, try this chanting and see what it does for you. You know, and let me know later on. I don't say you have to chant. You know, sometimes devotees say to someone who first comes to the temple, you have to chant 16 rounds or else you're in a fallen condition. But I just say, try the chanting. And if you like it, you know, just like the other day, I was speaking to someone who eats meat. He said, I really like to eat meat. I really like to eat meat. Instead of smashing, you nonsense. I said to him, that's all right. That's fine. And it's not fine to eat meat. Eat meat. But, you know, gradually you'll give it up when it comes time to the spiritual, when you arrive at a spiritual platform. And then, you know, put that idea in his mind, too, that he will get to that spiritual platform and give it up. So there's a way of dealing with people, not just children, to encourage them in Krishna consciousness, to facilitate their growth in Krishna consciousness. Okay. That's a nice question.